Hello, I hope your day is going well. This is Pat, and I'm reading from the Clinton Journal for Friday, February the 6th. And on the front page, the county approves the IEMA agreement and Washington Road Bridge Project, Clinton Woods reporting. Gordon Woods reporting, excuse me. From Clinton, at its January 22nd meeting, the County Board authorized participation in the Illinois Emergency Management Mutual Aid System response. DeWitt County Emergency Management Agency, EMA, Director William Pavlik briefed the board about the agreement. This was started in hopes that different jurisdictions would adopt this resolution in order to assist other counties, cities, other jurisdictions with emergency management duties, Pavlik said. Pavlik said it would permit counties to share emergency assets, but each county would still be in charge of its own assets. There is no cost to it, but it is just kind of covers the bases with regard to issues like personnel and resources, he added. The county previously did not have such an agreement in place. Under public safety, the board also approved the replacement of the county building X-ray machine on an emergency basis at a cost of $34,700 from Linev Systems. The cost will be paid from the county depreciation fund. On New Year's Eve Day, we got the message the machine out there had started to give a message it wasn't working, responded Sheriff Mike Walker. We called the 800 number and they informed us that it was no longer able to be fixed. Walker said the unit had been in service since 1997. He said the company that provided the machine no longer supplied them. So I reached out to the Illinois Sheriff's Association, Walker said. We had a couple of vendors at our summer conference. He said the Sheriff's Association put him in contact with Linev. The new machine features some AI features for identifying weapons. This machine can sync with metal detector, and then when someone walks through that metal detector, it indicates metal on the screen with the X-ray machine. It will show what part of the body the person has metal, Walker said. The Washington Road Bridge. The board approved $709,986 for Stark Excavating Incorporated to begin work on the Washington Road Bridge east of Clinton. We did have two interested parties, but only one submitted a bid, reported Road and Bridge Committee Chairman Jamie Prestigard. Prestigard said Stark's bid came in at 9.7% below the county engineer's estimate. The board also approved a professional services agreement with WHKS for construction observation and documentation services associated with the Washington Bridge replacement project at a cost of $93,688. Prestigard said the firm will provide all the documentation as required by the Illinois Department of Transportation, IDOT. In other business, the board voted to appoint Timothy Wilder, trustee of the Clinton Sanitary District, for a term expiring on the first Monday of May 2026. Wilder fills a vacancy left by Chris Sharp. The board also approved an addendum to the intergovernmental agreement reflecting an increase in fees with Farmer City Fire Protection District for ambulances services through Paramedic Services of Illinois. An addendum to the intergovernmental agreement reflecting an increase in fees with the county for the ambulance services. In agreement with Kane County to provide juvenile detention facilities on an as-needed basis, motions to approve the FY 2026 investment policy and annual treasurer's report for the year ending 2025. Also from the front page, Harris marks 1 year with economic development report. Gordon Woods reporting. Clinton. Tony Harris marked his first anniversary as Clinton's city administrator by briefing the city council Tuesday about the current economic development efforts. January kicked off pretty busy, Harris said. I wanted to go over a few things coming up I think are very important. Harris said he worked closely in 2025 with Kurt Holman, president of the DeWitt County Development Council, DCDC, and would continue that in 2026. Holman recently reported to the county board about economic development activities in the area. These were included in the January 30th Clinton Journal. In 2026, we pledge we're going to work hard on the housing issue, Harris said, and we've really already started that. Harris said a developer was interested in developing homes on Clinton's east side. He hasn't obtained the land yet, but he's interested in that, Harris said. Something I get asked about is if there is a TIF, Tax Increment Financing District, in that area. Harris said he was working with City Treasurer Clint Lichtenwalter on developing future TIFs and would eventually report about it to the City Council. He said Lichtenwalter and Mayor Helen McCallasy also had a conference call coming up with another interested developer. There are also a couple of businesses that had contacted me about the west side, Harris said, and some commercial areas too. Harris currently is working with maps of the east and west sides of the city to determine the best areas to develop TIF districts. A consultant is going to be here in the next meeting to give you guys a chance to ask her questions, Harris said. The consultant is working with the city on the downtown area and possibly help with developing the new TIF district, Harris added. Harris said some discussions had taken place about developing a program similar to the business facade grant program that would help residential homeowners fix up their homes. Clinton Firefighters Awarded. Awarded recently during the Clinton Fire Department Christmas party, the 2025 Firefighter of the Year was given to firefighter Tyler Carter. Carter has been a phenomenal asset to our department, officials said, taking as many classes he can to improve himself and making the service of helping the community a priority in his life. Awarded the 2025 Training Award was firefighter Chris Daniels. Daniels completed the Illinois Basic Firefighter and Hazardous Materials, along with the Medical Responder and among many of the other in-station trainings. Clinton Fire Department recently gave the Distinguished Service Award to Dick Vogel. Vogel stepped into a new role several years ago with the department from the American Red Cross, providing rehab. Vogel, always on call, would respond to those calls that would require the rehab unit to not only the city of Clinton, but throughout DeWitt County. It's unknown how many firefighter medical events have been prevented by having Dick with the hot coffee or cold Gatorade ready, with a fan or blanket and a snack. Vogel also took over the reins as the Membership and Foreign Fires Tax Fund Secretary. Last month, Vogel stepped down from these roles and plans to spend more time with his family. And now from the op-ed page, Trying to Online Date After 60, the Dear Clinton column by Joe Mellon. Hi, Clinton. I'm that single, retired engineer hibernating on the north side. As an engineer, I got paid to solve problems, and that instinct is still very much alive. I like to methodically examine any undesirable situation within my control and determine the best course of action to remedy it. To remedy my undesirable single status of 4+ years, I made a sensible decision 3 months ago. I gave up. LOL. The whole idea of online dating now leaves me as cold as our current weather. It was bad enough to have to weed through all the popular sites with their hidden fees and share of scammers. Online chats, phone calls, and a handful of meetups led to exactly one and done date. After that, I deleted my Facebook dating profile and gave up actively trying to find an activity partner lady. I now spend that time improving myself and caring for my two sweet 9-month-old kittens, Teddy and Stovey. The words that aptly describe how I feel about my decision are peace and relief. Looking back on it now, it's asking a lot to expect two retired strangers to invest enough time and energy just to see if they want to meet in person. What used to be exciting is now exhausting. Setting up a date when I was in school was relatively easy. I would ask a girl out, and they would either say yes, yay, or no, boo, and that was it. Today, trying to set up a date online is very much like looking for a used car. Everybody has their list of must-haves, deal-breakers, and makes their decision accordingly. The thing is, for many people like me, those lists of must-haves and deal-breakers keep getting more refined and less negotiable as the years go by. Lessons learned and mistakes made in previous relationships lengthen both lists, further restricting the list of possibilities. And as the list of possible matches shrinks, the fun and excitement of online dating shrinks. At a certain point, the sensible thing to do is simply delete any online dating profiles, which is what I did. I recently read an article titled, "Never Get a Girlfriend After 60," which includes the line, "Too many older men mistake attention for connection and end up becoming an emotional support system, a financial safety net, or a full-time therapist." That goes along with the saying I've heard for a while that people my age are looking for either a nurse or a purse. There are plenty of other warnings out there discouraging them from seeking a new relationship. I may start dating again any time, but I'm no longer actively looking, and the peace and relief that brings me feels great. So what about you? Have you or someone you know ever tried online dating? It would be nice to find a local gal to go on dates with, but it's certainly not a need. Maybe there's a better way for me to meet ladies who want to be met, but I'm too lazy to even think about that now. After all, it's hibernation season, Clinton. See you next week. Jo Mellon is a graduate of SDHS and Millikan University and worked for the Decatur Firestone Tire Plant. He raised a family in Georgia, wrote and published a book, and is happy to be back in central Illinois again. And another op-ed. Agony, the On Point column by Richard Koritz. Regardless of your political persuasion, this past week in Minneapolis has been agony for the American public. Democracy works, but only if those involved have respect for the other's point of view and afford time for debate and then abide by whatever the resulting vote is. Minneapolis is a sanctuary city, as are many other cities that have a liberal bent. Each community can voice its political preferences, and by and large, that doesn't really matter in the big picture. Immigration is a national policy enforced by federal agents, not state and local. The Supreme Court has clearly held that immigration comes under the purview of the federal government. Prior to Trump, Obama was the president who was the most active in deporting illegal aliens. In all honesty, Obama did a pretty good job of it. While I fully support the removal of immigrants who come here with criminal records or commit crimes while here on visas, I am conflicted about those who are gainfully employed and supporting families while paying taxes to the government. I have personally observed the immigrant workforce since I was a child in Iroquois County. Iroquois is a white German farming community where one would not expect to hear much about immigrants. But the opposite is the fact. Those German farmers all came from Germany as immigrants. During both world wars, they were at times not thought well of. The Lutheran church that my father went to as a child held their services in German, and the church records were all in German. World War I changed all of that. Church services changed to English, and the records would all be rewritten to in English in later years. The Bork and Cultrum nurseries in Onarga were and still are some of the largest nurseries in the Midwest. As a child, I observed that much of the labor at those nurseries was performed by Mexican immigrants. These Mexican families at first came to Illinois for the six-month growing cycle and then returned to Mexico for the winter. Many stayed, and there is a large percentage of Mexican families in western Iroquois County even today. They were hard workers and supported their families. They were part of the community. Today, those families are American citizens. They are valued parts of the community. Much of the American agriculture is supported and maintained by Hispanic labor. That relationship was and is beneficial for all. The key for national policy is that the immigration of labor followed the labor and immigration laws of the United States. Biden changed that by literally refusing to stop migration at the border. That problem was resolved by Trump in his first 2 months in the office. The border is now secure. We are now left with millions of immigrants who came into this country illegally, but with the full knowledge and tacit support of the Biden administration. I cannot fault that young person who came from Mexico or Guatemala and wants a better life for himself and his family. At the same time, I have to acknowledge that the immigration law of this nation was violated. Also coming in were those with criminal backgrounds and who saw the opportunity to prey on this country. Also included in this group were those who were released from prisons and mental institutions in their home countries and encouraged to come to the United States to solve problems for their native countries. For 4 years, the United States failed to adequately vet those coming into the country. That is the total dereliction of duty of the Biden administration. The current law clearly allows for the deportation of most of those that came here during Biden's term in office, irrespective of the comments on the left. Basic logistics clearly show that the country does not have the means to deport all of those who came in during the 4 years, irrespective of the comments of those on the right. The solution has to be a political compromise that supports our national interest. My thoughts are that the federal government should actively seek out and deport those illegal aliens who came to this country with criminal backgrounds or who have committed crimes while here. For those illegal aliens who are present and want to return to their home country, the current policy of providing them with a ticket home and $1,000 makes economic and moral sense. For those who are here without authorization and are actively engaged in improving their life here, either by work or education, there needs to be a path to permanent residency. I am not comfortable with full citizenship at the beginning of the process. These individuals would not be allowed to vote and would be required to pay a fee or fine for their entry and remaining in the U.S. There would be many more details to this plan than this column allows. The above is simply a proposed compromised resolution of a very difficult problem facing the country today. Think about it and voice your thoughts. This matter needs to be addressed, and the time is now. Richard Corix is an Illinois native, attorney, and former DeWitt County State's Attorney. We have one obituary today, Daryl William Bill Cruthsis. That last name is spelled C-R-U-T-H-I-S, Denver, North Carolina. Daryl William Bill Cruthsis, a registered pharmacist of Denver, North Carolina, born on December the 22nd, 1946, in Clinton, Illinois, passed away on January the 27th, 2026, surrounded by the love of his family. Bill will be remembered for his dedication, generosity, enthusiasm for life, and his deep love for his family. His presence will be missed by all who knew him. Services will be held at James Funeral Home in Huntersville, North Carolina at 2 p.m., followed by a celebration of life at Magnolia Woods in Huntersville, North Carolina. And now from the law enforcement page, the Clinton Police Department. Citations, January the 30th, Jordan Sturgeon, 37, of Clinton, was issued a citation for operating a motor vehicle with suspended registration. Sturgeon was issued a notice to appear. Arrests, on January the 27th, Eric Fothery, 59, of Clinton, was charged with domestic battery. Fothery was transported to DeWitt County Jail and was released to corrections. January the 30th, Haber Funes, 19, of Clinton, was charged with operating a motor vehicle with no valid driver's license, never issued, and was operating an uninsured motor vehicle. Funes was transported to the DeWitt County Jail and released to corrections. January the 31st, Corey Spence, 42, of Clinton, was charged with disorderly conduct and criminal trespass to residence. Spence was transported to the DeWitt County Jail and released to corrections. February the 1st, Timothy Strode, 48, of Edmonton, Kentucky, was arrested on a Macon County warrant. Strode was transported to the DeWitt County Jail and released to corrections. February the 1st, Donna Whitfield, 49, of Edmonton, Kentucky, was arrested on a Macon County warrant. Whitfield was transported to the DeWitt County Jail and released to corrections. February the 2nd, Melissa Burcham, 44, of Kenny, was charged with driving on a suspended driver's license. Burcham was transported to the DeWitt County Jail and released to corrections. And from the DeWitt County Sheriff's Office for the week of January the 30th through January the 23rd through the 30th, investigation into the scene of an accident revealed that Herbert Coffey, 46, of Farmer City, was eastbound on State Highway 54 approaching DuPont Road. Timothy Walsh, 61, of Farmer City, pulling a trailer, was also eastbound on State Highway 54 in front of Coffey. Coffey attempted to pass Walsh as Walsh turned into a driveway on State Highway 54 in Farmer City. Coffey struck the left side of Walsh. Coffey stated he attempted to pass Walsh and did not think Walsh used his turn signal but had his flashers on. Walsh turned left. Coffey swerved left, struck a mailbox, and struck the left side rear of Walsh. Walsh stated he did not see Coffey until he was trying to pass Coffey, said he had his left signal on and it was still on after the crash. A witness who was also eastbound behind Coffey stated Walsh had activated the left turn signal prior to Coffey passing Walsh. The crash caused disabling damage to the front passenger side of Coffey's vehicle, and damage was visible along most of the passenger side. The driver's side fender and the front door were also had visible damage. No airbags deployed. Walsh had minor damage to the rear left wheel. Anytime Towing arrived and towed Coffey's vehicle to their facility in Farmer City. And another entry, Curtis Wisely, 61, of Clinton, was arrested and charged with aggravated assault offense based on the use of firearm, device, or motor vehicle and resisting or obstructing a peace officer, firefighter, or correctional institution employee. And another entry, Patrice Winfrey, of 33, of Decatur, was issued a citation for speeding 89 miles per hour in a 65 mile per hour zone. Winfrey was released with a no-required court appearance. Another entry, Isaac Graves, 21, of Prairieville, Louisiana, was issued a citation for speeding 74 miles per hour in a 55 mile per hour zone. Graves was released with no required court appearance. All suspects are presumed innocent until found guilty in a court of law. IDOA, a $3.6 million grant for local food infrastructure. Springfield, the Illinois Department of Agriculture, IDOA, announced plans to distribute $3.6 million in fiscal year 2026 at the Everything Local Conference in Springfield on Wednesday. The funds, which were appropriated in fiscal 26 state budget, will be used to support local food processing, aggregation distribution. Grants will be available for collaborative projects from $1,000 to $250,000 and for individual projects from $1,000 to $75,000. Strong agricultural depends on strong infrastructure, said IDOA Director Jerry Costello II. The Local Food Infrastructure Grant Program gives Illinois farmers the processing, aggregation, and distribution capacity they need to ensure Illinois-grown food can reach consumers. Application for grant funding will be available February the 18th, 2026, on the Illinois Department of Agriculture website. Everyone benefits when we empower our local farmers, said State Senator Doris Turner, Democrat of Springfield, chair of the Senate Agricultural Committee. By fortifying this food system, we are supporting our local farmers and mitigating food insecurity. This funding will expand access to fresh, local foods and strengthen the local economy and grow the food supply chain. When we say farm-to-home food, we forget about the critical infrastructure in between, said State Senator David Kohler, a Democrat of Peoria, member of the State Senate Agricultural Committee. This investment ensures that our food makes it from farm to local food processor and distribution safely and cleanly to your plates at home. With food prices rising across Illinois, investing in local food infrastructure is no longer optional, it's essential, said State Representative Sonia Harper, a Democrat of Chicago, chair of the House Agriculture and Conservation Committee. We created this program to strengthen our farmers, shorten the supply chain, and ensure Illinois families can access affordable, locally grown food. I've spent my career fighting to move our state from food deserts and fragile systems toward real, durable solutions, and this investment helps put that vision into action. Eligible applicants include Illinois residents who store, process, package, aggregate, or distribute value-added agricultural products or plan to do so. These entities must meet one of the following criteria: an Illinois farm with fewer than 50 employees, an Illinois cooperative with fewer than 50 employees, an Illinois slaughter and or processing facility with fewer than 50 employees. Slaughter and or processing facilities must be USDA or state licensed or be a custom exempt slaughter and or processing facility. Other applicants can be an Illinois food business with fewer than 50 employees, an Illinois food hub with fewer than 50 employees, and an Illinois nonprofit organization, a unit of local government in Illinois. To encourage further expansion of the local food industry, all grant funding must be used for purchasing, leasing to own, renting, building, or installing infrastructure related to the processing, storage, aggregation, or distribution of value-added agricultural products. Those interested can prepare for the upcoming application by pre-registering with sam.gov. And I will leave you today with this note in history. In 1987, President Ronald Reagan turned 76 years old this day and became the oldest U.S. president in history. Goodbye until next week. Have a good week, and I'll see you then.